The time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end?
WHFR, Dearborn. Okay, we're now going to connect with the WHFR Journal. Jay, are you there?
Yes, thank you very much. We're doing a live version of the journal. Well, we're usually live, I guess, right, Dennis? But we're out at the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market, which continues in West Dearborn until 3 p.m. today, like every Friday, at least through October 18th. So get on down here. Still, the vendors out there selling their wares, and the weather is lovely, and the skies have sort of opened up, and we're having a great time. But we're on speakerphone, and maybe you can hear the difference, folks. We're not in the studio. But we have one of our council candidates for the city of Dearborn who is going to be on the ballot in November 5th, survive the test in the primary. And happy to introduce to you Sharon Domage, who may be known to many of you already for her many years of serving on the Board of Trustees and Henry Ford Community College, guiding us and the K-12. In that regard. But welcome, and thank you for coming on the journal today, Sharon.
Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate the invite. It's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait to get to the questions.
Okay, well, we'll jump right in. For those that don't know who you are, and I've said your name, your last name, a couple different ways in the past. Sometimes I try to use the French, like Domage.
It's Domage.
Domage.
That's what
okay.
It's better as.
Okay.
Domage. It really was Domage, but it's Domage.
Okay, that's fine. So no insult intended there if I'd used the French. Okay. But tell our listeners, for those that aren't aware, about, your own personal education and jobs and other relevant experience. And, of course, your many years serving the public schools and Henry Ford Community College.
Well, I lived in Dearborn for about 48 years. I attended Dearborn High. Then I went to Henry Ford Community College and got a degree in liberal arts, and then I went back and went into nursing, so I liked it so much I went twice. And then I went to Detroit College of Business, got a degree in business from there, and went on to Central for a master's in administration. And I've worked as a nurse since 1985 for various companies as a director of nursing, and now I'm doing case management, which I like a lot. I enjoy my job. It's busy, but I still like it. I've been very active in the community for all of those years. From the day I moved here, I jumped right in and got going. PTA president over the years at three different schools. Rotary Club, the Exchange Club, Dearborn Chamber of Commerce, Board of Directors, still an ambassador for the Chamber, member of the Exchange Club. I've gotten three or four different really nice awards that I'm really proud of. I serve on the Oakwood Hospital System Clinical Ethics Committee. This is about my fourth or fifth year for doing that, and I really enjoy that. But I think that'll tell you a little bit about my character to serve on an ethics committee. I served on the Board of Education in Dearborn and Henry Ford Community College for 22 years, and I think my experience with public funding and grants and going through the process of changing from being able to raise taxes to pay the bills at both of those institutions to what I like to call the Robin Hood theory of taxes, which means we send our money to Lansing and we get some back. We don't get everything we send, and that's to do with the revenue sharing and Proposal A and a lot of those things that happened to us in 1994.
Well, your experience certainly has been a great variety in the local community, and of course on the firing line, if you will, of all the K-12 and Henry Ford Community College educational questions and policies over the years. So there's got to be just more of the same and even more of other things at the city council level. A lot of the candidates, a lot of the challengers, if I may say, seem to be running on a anti-administration platform, if you will. In other words, they disagree with most of the recent major decisions by our current mayor, Mayor O'Reilly. How do you feel about his policies and the major decisions the last couple of years? Do you feel you're pro or con or something else?
I think I'm something else. I like to look at each thing individually rather than take a position and be anti-administration on everything. Sometimes you're on the winning side and sometimes you're on the losing side when you're part of a board or council, either way. And I think it's your job to make whatever that decision is work. As far as the mayor goes, I can work with the mayor fine. They are not his policies. They are the city policies. And I think that's got to be a real clear distinction. There are some decisions that have been made I agree with and some I don't agree with. However, I think once the decision has been made, that it's the responsibility, if you're on the dissenting side, to do what you can to make it work.
So the first big issue then to ask you in regard to these decisions the last couple of years is about the new City Hall that was voted on. The new building has been bought. The old City Hall, of course, has not officially been sold yet, but there is, of course, the Art Space people, and they still have to get some state grants to pay for remodeling and other things. But so did you like the idea of moving to the new City Hall, and what comments might you make about that issue?
Well, I don't mind moving to the new City Hall. I don't like the way it was done initially. I don't think enough information was given initially. Yet I understand the process of purchase of property, because certainly when a building is being sold or is under foreclosure, you're certainly not going to get the word out that a public entity wants to buy it either. And I think, you know, my experience on the school board, we ran into that with the Detroit College of Business property. So, you know, you don't want everybody to think that, you know, it'll just raise the price of it. However, the decision has been made, and I think it's up to us to help make it work. I think there is really a value in having everything in a central location. And I think when you go from, say, Greenfield, basically all the way down to this end, to the west end of town, that pretty much all of our city services are there. And at some point in the future, I would think there would be some other public things in that area as well, although I don't know for sure if that'll ever come to fruition. But it might, you know, I happen to think it's a good idea.
You know, I had a full hour interview with Superintendent Brian Whiston of the K-12 system in Dearborn last Friday on the show, and asked them whether or not they have any plans at all yet to maybe take up Mayor O'Reilly's offer to also occupy part of the Dearborn Administrative Building, which will be, in effect, the new City Hall. And, of course, he said they don't at this point. They're just, if their millage passes this fall, part of it, or one of the buildings they're going to try to improve is the Tenac building, their own administrative building, which has got some serious leakage problems, I guess, in the roof and so on. There's a lot of space in that new building for other groups or activities to come into. It's amazing to me that somebody, 10,000 square feet, Dennis?
Huge, yeah.
It's huge, anyway. A lot more than what the city actually needs, even moving everything they have from City Hall. So it could very well be the hub for many different activities. Do you think the K-12 should relocate, or is that just a cost issue that has to be looked at?
Well, I think it needs to be looked at, and I don't think it's a bad idea at all. However, I know board members, some of them were upset about reading about it in the newspaper, and I think people just got really discouraged by that, and that was one of the things I don't like about the way it was done.
Yeah.
And so I would have I don't know whether I would have objected to it or not, but certainly I think your responsibility as a mayor or a council member is looking at ways to save money, and you can't just look at what's happening this week or next week. You need to look 10 years or further down the road, and if there's going to be a huge cost savings in moving and your fixed costs are less, it makes absolute perfect sense to do so. Now, having said that, I have been to many of the council meetings and many of the study sessions where this has been discussed, and I hear people come forward and say they can do all of the energy efficient things at City Hall it to make it more cost effective. However, I'll use sports in high school as a perfect example. It had high ceilings. They all had to be lowered. I don't see how that could really happen very well at City Hall. We actually had Johnson Controls come in and give us some ideas about energy efficiency in our buildings, and one of them was to lower the ceiling. Mm. Well, how do you do that at City Hall with that big round area there without ruining the integrity of the building? So I think there's a, you know, it's not just a matter of, you have to think things through all the way. And I know that some of the people who are opposed because they think it would keep their swimming pools open. And I've heard that before. And, you know, it's Dearborn's changed. The needs have changed. The people have changed. The demographics have changed. I don't think people move to Dearborn because of swimming pools. My plan is to have something viable in each area of the city, each quadrant, whether it be a pool or a splash park or something. I don't believe there needs to be something in every neighborhood. To me, I think fire and safety, the police safety, is more important than anything else in our city services. And as long as you provide opportunities to people to have access to a nice pool or a nice splash park, I think that's more important, and try to do things as cost-effectively as possible.
The city may still have some major budget problems facing it. Property values, they say, in this area, Detroit in general, I guess, are going up, although Detroit specifically, I can't see how they could go down any lower, personally. But, you know, that we have a supplemental millage right now in place, raising money for the city, and it's got another 3 years to go, maybe. And hopefully then the old millage will still be adequate. As property values go up, do you see any places for either additional income or more cuts to the budget at this point?
Well, I think the key, obviously, is raising is to be able to increase the tax base by property values going up. Obviously, that's the most desirable way to do it, and I think part of that is to have the good services, good city services, including fire, the safety, the fire and the police, but also our other city services. But we need to regrow our business districts, and with that, I believe people will come to town. And I think as long as you have good schools, good services, and decent parks and places for kids to go, we still have a great program here. Other cities don't have what we have, and I think we're very lucky in that sense. And I just want to say that it really bothers me, you know, to hear people say Dearborn should be like it was 20 years ago. Well, it's not. It's not going to be that way ever again, but that does not mean it cannot be a vibrant community.
We're speaking with Sharon Domage here on the WHFR Journal today, live from the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market, using my cell phone here because of other technical difficulties, so we're on speakerphone. And Dennis is here, too.
Yes, I am.
Okay. See, I just want to let people know there's a team working here. Sharon, let's continue. You mentioned, of course, the need for continuing to support our fire department and police department, and you've been indicating that maybe the people who have been supporting going back to all the swimming pools we've had, maybe that's a niche that time has passed. But we have some other areas in the city where groups are desperate for money, like our public libraries have had various cuts and redirection of services. We're right next to the Bryan Public Library here, and that's even being shared now by the Chamber of Commerce. Historical Museum is desperate for money, too. What about the libraries and Historical Museum and their funding sources? I think at this point, in fact, the Historical Museum in Dearborn is receiving no funding at all. Is that appropriate?
Well, I think we're going to have to figure out how to fund some of it. But they are having a big fundraiser, and I'm really excited about that. It's on the 27th. It's a beer tasting, and I think it's from 5 to 11 or 6 to 11. I'm not sure what the cost is, but I sure encourage everyone to go.
It's very reasonable. It's like $9. Oh, and they give you a free glass, and the first beverage, and there are some, apparently some other food is going to be served for an extra cost. But I guess if you want to do a lot of beer tasting for an extra cost, on top of that, they suggest there's a system of designated drivers and there's free parking. So more information about that you can get from the Dearborn Historical Museum, and we have a spot that's running on WHFR about it. So that's the 27th. So, yeah, they have to resort to these fundraising activities in order to get basic money just to keep the McFadden Ross going. And we do have a lot of history in Dearborn, you'll have to admit, and a lot of things that aren't always on display either at the museum. So, I personally think something would be found there. Of course, I love libraries. I think libraries are a great place to hang out. Of course, I like reading books and magazines a lot, but times are changing, and a lot of those resources may be available on the Internet, too, but so do the libraries. The libraries have that. So is that the same sort of situation? Things are changing and has to be reexamined with Dearborn's support for its libraries?
Absolutely. Well, I think there is support for the libraries. I just think that actually I FOIA'd the study that was done on the services and the libraries and the pools and everything. What was published was an excerpt of all of that, and it included in there the usage of the libraries, and the library usage is down, and because kids continue or people continue to seek their resources on the Internet, and do it. They're not purchasing books. They're looking up information and obtaining it from there. So the way people do things is different than it was. Now, I love books. I don't have a Kindle. I like to hold the book. I like to smell it if it's not moldy. I just like to have it in my hand. And so I'm a big supporter of libraries. My own kids came here to this library. As children, we went to the programs. My grandson comes here with his other grandmother for the program. I just think things are changing, and I think every single thing in the city needs to be looked at. You need to look at the process that's in place and start examining how things are done and how things can be improved. Just because they were done someway 5 years ago or 10 years ago does not make them the right way to do it.
Well, obviously, I think that closing some of our libraries and reducing the number of hours, too, is going to frustrate people, so there won't be as much attendance. So if studies are done in the future, I hope they can somehow compensate or incorporate the fact that there's fewer libraries and fewer hours. And there are some, I know, as a library supporter in general, there are some studies or some examples of library systems in other cities in the country that are actually increasing use and you know, number of people coming by. And I think those things have to be explored, too. That's my editorial comment. You want to give the usual qualifier, Dennis?
I would love to. The opinions expressed here on the Journal are not necessarily those of anyone at Henry Ford Community College or at the radio station.
Right. This is Sharon DeMage here, who's our guest for about another 7 or 8 minutes. She gets her 30 minutes of fame on WHFR.
Sharon, I have to ask you a question. You know, there's an old cliche, you can't cut your way to prosperity. You have to, at some point, start generating revenue. And I know I've talked to the leaders of a couple of, you know, surrounding communities, and they're exploring the options with, I don't know what to call it other than advertising, naming rights for different things, and having companies be able to come in and generate, the city generates revenue by advertising. Placing ads in public areas, maybe at a basketball court that's used a lot, you know, things like that. Is that something you would ever consider or explore?
Absolutely. And we did consider that on the school board as well. And if you'll look and you'll see there, you know, there are things like that. And that's, you know, it's real important. It's a little different with the city than it is with the school district. But absolutely, there's no, you know, it was, any source of revenue needs to be explored. I think that's critical. Now, the bottom line is there's not the funds to go around like there used to be, and you can't raise the taxes to make it work, and so you have to look for other opportunities and efficiencies.
Here's one of the hot-button questions that I think we have time to sneak in, and that is an ongoing problem with, or commentary, anyway, from a lot of people about paid parking in West Dearborn here. Should it continue? Do you think, I know we've still got the parking towers to pay for. But what about paid parking in West Airborne? Is it just now that it's in place, should it stay? I think people are used to it by now?
I think people are getting used to it. Now, people I talk to when I go to some of the events are not complaining about paid parking. What they're complaining about is it's not so user-friendly. For instance, not everybody has a cell phone that you can text the number to over at the meters. There's a four-hour limit on some meters. That's a problem. The parking decks themselves, I attended the City of the Whole meeting last night, and there was some discussion on which should be on the agenda next week's meeting for special rates for long-term users of the parking decks, which utilize one of them and help pay for the other as it goes. So that would be beneficial. But my biggest complaint with them is, what people don't understand is that the business owners are responsible for maintaining the parking lots in some way. So there is an assessment that they paid prior to the parking. And as a business owner, I know that because we had five spaces and we had to pay whatever that was, amount was on our taxes to maintain those five spaces. So the business owners aren't paying that. The people who frequent the bar so much are not complaining. They're used to paying it because they hang out in Royal Oak. They hang out in other places that have it. Birmingham has paid parking. I worked there. I paid it. I know. And so I don't think that's necessary. I think we just have to work to make it more user-friendly. But I think the biggest thing to attract people to West Dearborn isn't the parking. It's the stores. We have to get some businesses here in town. Absolutely, first and foremost.
So there's a task for the Chamber of Commerce. Get working on that, guys. I'm right next to their office here. So in our last 3 minutes of our allotted time for this, Sharon, you can please tell us where people can contact you and for more information about your campaign. And I'm sorry I didn't have enough chance to talk to you before, but are you going to be in any upcoming debates or fundraising activities in the next month, let's say?
Yes, Monday night, the League of Women Voters Forum is at City Hall, and it's we have to be there at 6:15. Okay. I don't think we have very much time, but anyway, it's there. And then on Friday night, I just received something from Henry Ford Village, and they're giving each person an opportunity to speak for a few minutes. Next Saturday night at Father Patrick O'Kelly, I'm hosting a trivia night, which is kind of fun, inexpensive, $15 for friends to come in and play trivia as a little fundraiser.
So this is not tomorrow night. This is a week from tomorrow.
The 28th.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then on the 16th of October, I am having a German, an Oktoberfest with a German dinner at Park Place from 5 to 8.
And the date again on that?
That is October 16th. And you can contact me at 313-561-6569 or sl.dolmage@yahoo.com or Facebook, whatever. Anybody who wants to talk, I'm happy to talk to them, and I return every single phone call. You can even blast me.
Well, that's very brave. But we know you're that kind of can-do person from your years of service to the community. Just finally, got about a minute, but summarize why you should be one of their choices for Dearborn City Council people this time in November 5th election.
I think my broad-based experience with the community and all the activities that I've been involved with in the Chamber of Commerce and other aspects of business and my experience on the Board of Education absolutely make me the most qualified. I have a clear understanding of public funding and grants. Public funding, whether it's the school district or the city, it's the same thing. And it just makes me ready to get right in there and get to work.
Love people that are ready to get to work, even for a part-time salary that city councils pay, unfortunately. But Sharon, thanks so much for being here today and explaining your positions on the WHFR Journal. It's always good seeing you again.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That was fun.
and shaking hands all around here. And since we don't have any spots we can play live, we're just going to keep talking here. So, Dennis, why don't you go over again about the event coming up this Monday with all the council candidates?
Okay.
Although I have it right here. He's grabbing his glasses, folks. This is live radio, let me tell you. That's going to be at Monday, and it's going to be, of course, in the boardroom of the Dearborn Public Schools. At Tenaik, as it's known. That's down on Audette. That is just north of Outer Drive, right?
Exactly.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay.
Between Outer Drive and the Oakwood Hospital. So, yeah, you can't miss it.
Outer Drive and Oakwood Hospital. And it starts at 6.
7 o'clock.
Well, yeah. Okay. At 6, let me just say, I thought in some other, there's some sort of gathering at 6, and then the event itself is going to be discussions with several. Oh, it's going to be panels, too. I see. Let me just read this, folks. Okay. Doesn't have his glasses on yet. This is organized by the League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, first of all. And, of course, everybody's encouraged to get there, voters, educators, parents, older students, and others interested to attend a public forum on Michigan's school funding issues. And it says, come and learn. Oh, this is not Monday. This is Thursday, Dennis. So there's a Monday event, too. I think that was the other event. Okay, this is Thursday, September 26th at 7 p.m. Rewind the tape.
I think basically there's two different events. This one is for the school. This is what Wiston was talking about last week.
Right.
Information meeting. And Ms. Dimash was talking about a forum put on by the League of Women Voters on Monday.
Yes, but this is also League of Women Voters, which was my confusion.
Right.
So they're very busy here, folks. So Monday, I've got that somewhere, and we're going to get that on for you.
Yeah.
While you're looking that up, give you a task here, Dennis.
Yeah.
Find it somewhere. Okay. I will go back to some stories. And, yes, from Sunday's Dearborn Press and Guide. Hope you folks are subscribing, by the way, to the Dearborn Press and Guide and the Dearborn Times Herald, because it's really pretty important. Got a bunch of stories in here, too, Dennis.
Yeah, that's what I was looking for.
I love
remote broadcasts.
Yeah, we're playing live, but then we're not in the studio, so the wind's blowing things away. Yeah. Give them all those sheets, Susan. Okay.
Right.
We have our general manager here, and we're merely messing up. Oh, yes. Well, Dennis has something he found, and it's helping to support the Dearborn Animal Shelter. Tell us about it.
The annual No Beast Feast, and it is tonight, September 20th, from 6 to 10 p.m. at the Park Place Banquet Hall. That, of course, is at 23400 Park Street. It's an all-vegetarian event, and it features butternut squash ravioli, pumpkin white bean soup, portobello pilaf with kale, cherries jubilee, plus more tantalizing dishes. I'm reading right here. It also has beer, wine, and soft drinks, which are included in the meal. The featured guest speaker is Dr. Carrie Saunders, also known as Dr. Food, who will share how plant-based foods are nutritional superheroes. Tickets are $45 in advance or $50 at the door. I don't know what advance means. I imagine if the event starts at 6 o'clock, if you called maybe at 5, they would still be glad to take your money. Anyway, the number is 313-943-2697. That's 313-943-2697, the No Beast Feast.
Which implies all vegetarian, Faye, yes. Because if you love the animals, you don't want to eat those animals. Although, exceptions can be made, and to each their own. But great to support that that event. Okay, going back to a couple of stories from the Dearborn Press and Guide from last Sunday. Okay, new garage use ordinance, and we told you about that. And it's already been voted on once and passed, and one more vote, and that's it. Okay, so it will become official after the second reading at the council's meeting at 7:30 p.m. September 24th. And, of course, that is Tuesday night, in the council chambers at the current City Hall. And, of course, what will that mean? Well, there's a lot of details there, but among the rules in the proposed ordinance, one garage is permitted per residential lot, and it's intended to provide off-street vehicular parking and incidental household storage. It cannot be used for any commercial purpose or leased to someone other than the house's owner or tenant. So you can't, like, rent, in effect, your garage out as a living space for anybody, for example. And no garage, secondly, can be converted into a habitable space. So don't even think about that, you know, putting a bedroom or something out there. Now, habitable space as defined by this rule includes living, sleeping, eating, or cooking. And bathrooms and open flame heaters are prohibited. Don't do that in your garage. Garages can be used for social gatherings like parties as long as there's no physical conversion of the garage. One of those conversions I've seen in my neighborhood is actually, and it's quite typical, is putting taking out the actual drop-down door,
right,
and putting in a screen door. And I don't know, I think it's very common in East Dearborn, and the reason this came up is that some people were saying that this rule is not respectful of a variety of cultural traditions about gathering in spaces outdoors to enjoy conversation and or maybe smoking or whatever. And, of course, if you do put, let's say, screen doors, sliding screen doors on the front of your garage, then it would be more conducive for that kind of social activity. This has been discussed by the City Planning Commission back and forth, in and out for 4 or 5 months. They have recommended these rules for one reason was supposedly maintenance of property values. And this is disputable. Like some people say, well, show us one place where property values have gone down because a garage or several garages now have screened-in front doors.
And there, you know, I was thinking about that. What if a like-minded family moved into, let's say, an East Dearborn home that had a screened-in, and they wanted it that way? That would, in their minds, that would increase the value of the home because it was already done. You know, and you brought up something earlier. Once this passes, and it does look like it will, what will the cost be to be compliant with the ordinance? I mean, that's a lot of money, isn't it?
Well, the question is whether there's going to be a fine involved. But, yes, putting back in a garage door, if you've already had one taken out, and moving out maybe some of these habitable items, whatever they might happen to be, cooking facilities or whatever. So there's cost in that. But then the city may, of course, impose a fine if that's not done promptly, too. I'm not sure what sort of fines are attached to this provision. But they say that faucets, though, by the way, folks, and utility sinks that meet the city code are permitted. So you could have sort of like a wash-up basin. If you use the garage to work on your car or something, you could have a sink or water in there to wash whatever you might need. But you can't put in washer dryers or something, and you can't put in cooking facilities or bathrooms, full bathrooms or anything like that. So there's the cost to go back to how it was before. One of the things about property values, though, Dennis, I think, is that the city, starting back in the 90s, had a ruling that any new garage in Dearborn that's built has to at least accommodate two cars.
Right.
And the idea is you can't keep your cars on the driveway. You put them in the garage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, even in my neighborhood, though, well, in my neighborhood, some of the older garages, they don't fit two cars, so people keep their cars parked on their driveway. And in some cases, those two cars, depending on the length of your lot, they intrude over the sidewalk, and that's a violation because sidewalks can't be restricted for the sake, especially, of people in wheelchairs and using canes and so on. It's an American Disabilities Act ruling from the 90s that you can't block sidewalks for people that really need the sidewalks, that can't easily walk onto the grass or go around. They have to stay on the sidewalk themselves because of their physical restrictions. So supposedly, if your lot looks like a parking lot, that lowers the value of the residential area. You can't have a lot of cars parked all over in front even. The idea is to garage them. That was the Dearborn principle for quite a few years now.
And in East Dearborn, it's not uncommon for the multifamily dwellings to not have a garage at all. So there are I remember taking my daughter to her friends in East Dearborn, and I would have to pull over and wait for the parade of cars to pass because there were so many cars parked along the street. Well, yeah, everything's just blown away.
Yeah.
The news just blew away.
That's why we have Susan McGraw here.
Yeah.
She's chasing the newspaper. I was going to ask her, since she loves to talk, too, what about Garden City? Now, she's grown up and lived in Garden City, Michigan, all her life. She's a Garden City girl. She says it's the best place to live. course, she's a little biased. But what about Garden City, Susan? Anything about garage use? Anything as weird as that in Garden City?
Well, we don't have those weird problems in Garden City. Are you kidding me? We got all that worked out. No, the community has changed, certainly, over the years, as most have. But what I love and always have loved about the community is that, yeah, we have a McDonald's. We have we've got our basic staff that I need to live by. But we also have our cute little corner store and our little Garden City Cafe and our little park and we have our little library. And I'm saying little. Compared to Dearborn, it's all little, certainly. But, we have the parade still. We have 20,000 people in our town, and we still have a major parade that's televised. And, so...
Are you part of the Chamber of Commerce?
I'm not. No, I'm not. I'm just, honestly, as a community member...
What a booster.
I love the fact that we haven't lost that hometown, old-fashioned feel. And to me, that's what makes that particular town of Garden City.
So specifically, though, do you put your cars in your garages or do you keep them parked on the driveways?
We do both. I mean, I don't...
So how many garages have you seen in your areas that have screen doors instead of a regular garage door?
Yeah, I've never seen that.
Okay.
I'll be honest. I've not seen that. Now, you mean, instead of the garage door, I don't see why it's a big deal if somebody chooses, I own the property, I can do what I want with it.
Well, the city of Dearborn says that it's hard to get the cars back in the garages because they have to drive over the tracks for the screen doors, the sliding doors. And that you wouldn't tend to ever pull your cars into that garage anymore if there you had the screen doors and the tracks in place.
As long as you're not blocking the sidewalk for people to walk by that want to walk with their families or in wheelchairs or whatever the case, I don't think that's the city's business, personally.
Okay. All right. Well, that's the opinion of people other than those here in Dearborn and Dearborn Heights. But certainly it could be a cultural thing that shouldn't be restricted, just like we have, made accommodations about different religions and different religious practices in Dearborn, like certain bell ringing and various times of the mornings and during the day, and communities have adapted to that. And I think they'll probably adapt to this, too, but it's amazing how controversial this is, and I think... And it looks like, as Dennis said, it's probably going to go into effect because it was passed, I think, unanimously by the Planning Commission. The guidelines have been approved by the lawyers, although some people say they're going to make legal challenges if it is passed. And it looks like it'll be passed by council at the end of the month, next week, in fact. So we'll see how that goes. Always fun to see how communities can adapt to new things. Now, Dennis, we've got a Dearborn Heights story here. It was in the last Sunday. Car lease request causing debate in Dearborn Heights. This is in regard to the community development director, Ron Amon, that he has a leased car. But it turns out, you were telling me earlier, that all department heads in city government in Dearborn Heights have leased cars that the city pays for.
I don't know, but the ones that I know of do. And it's really interesting because then my boss, for example, who you've met, Bob Ancraft, he drives his own car in from Plymouth. He lives in Plymouth. He comes into Dearborn Heights. If he chooses to take the company or the city vehicle, it's in a parking spot at the police station where his office is, and he would drive it around town, but then he takes his car home. Well, apparently some people take their cars home. They use the company vehicle, but they reimburse the city for the gas that is used on their own personal time, commuting to and from work and whatever. And that was basically what this whole issue was about. And it was interesting because it was in a special session before the actual city council meeting, which started at 8 o'clock. So none of this was on tape. I won't say Ron Amon was attacked. He definitely wasn't. There were a lot of very serious and aggressive questions as to what he's doing because the city is not in a good financial state and they're looking to cut money anywhere they can. The bottom line is Mr. Amon pays for his own gas.
Yeah.
So this was really a non-issue.
And another point he brought up is that, for city business, if he used his own car, he'd have to, legally, it's more than 50 cents a mile this is figured out by the federal government, what the mileage allotment has to be, and it's every business has to pay that same, fair amount. And of course, gasoline has gone up. So he was pointing out that'd be more expensive, depending on the mileage that he usually does every year for the city of Dearborn Heights than leasing the car.
Exactly. And it's not uncommon for him to take a trip to, he brought up this specific example of, he had a conference in Kalamazoo. Well, that's not next door. That's not, you know, the, it's not like it's a beautiful town of Garden City. It's a little bit away anyway, so 51 cents a mile or whatever it is for that trip, you can see how, yes, that would get, it could get out of control.
We're broadcasting live from the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market, and we're using a cell phone right now because we had a little technology glitch.
I will say that Susan did listen to our broadcast from her vehicle, and she says we sound clear. So
okay, that's good. It's a new iOS 7 on iPhone 5. So let's give credit where credit is due. Anyway, but also, Dennis, as long as you're sitting here, the mayoral election is big time over there in Dearborn Heights. It's, of course, current Mayor Dan Pilepko running for re-election, and its challenger is Janet Badalow, who for many years has been on the Dearborn City Council, and 12 years, and we interviewed her on the Journal.
Yes. No, actually, it was on News and Views, but the interview did not pick up for some reason, so right. we did a redo on the Journal. And that was when she announced her candidacy for mayor. And they had a bit of, they call it a forum, I call it a debate, but it was last night. A neighborhood association, League of Women Voters, do not have the resources or whatever, I'm not sure why, but they're putting something together for Dearborn, but that was not an option for Dearborn Heights. So the Neighborhood Association put something together yesterday. I understand that both Mayor Pilepko, the current mayor, and Janet Badalow, Councilwoman Badalow, were there. 100 people or so showed up. All the department heads were there, and it was kind of a big deal. It was not recorded on tape, so we're going to find out what we can, and I'm sure it'll be in the newspaper. But I understand it was a spirited forum, and there will be more to come. They just don't have dates right now. And I think you know this, that the Press and Guide website will be, starting after October 26th, will be posting up to 3 minutes. Each candidate for whatever office in Dearborn and Dearborn Heights had 3 minutes to a video presentation, so that should be fun, too.
Yeah, they. I'm not sure how many people are going to take advantage of that, just like I'm not sure how many people are going to. We still have a few challengers for the Dearborn City Council that haven't come on the Journal here. But whatever their choices are for their campaign, you know, whatever they think is good, I do think that the Dearborn Heights mayoral race is going to be, it could be potentially very close, because both are very well-known candidates, Janet Badalow and Mayor Pilepko currently. Whereas here in Dearborn, Mayor O'Reilly is going against
Binkley,
who I think he might have run before, but nonetheless, he just does not have the established experience in city government yet, and so he doesn't really, not his fault, doesn't have money for a big-time campaign or a lot of mailing, so he can't fully get the word out.
And I think that the numbers in the primary attest to exactly what you're saying. Mayor O'Reilly had something like 84% of the votes,
even with four challengers.
Even with four challengers. So and we will. And that's when I think that we're going to do whatever it takes to have Mr. Binkley on the Journal to give him, you know, his what 30 minutes or whatever to gain additional exposure.
Right. Yeah. Well, let's see what else we have in stories. Let's see what else I can grab here from the paper. We haven't found the official word about the Monday night League of Women Voters.
No.
I do believe it's at City Hall, whereas the other one is next Thursday night. It's about school funding, and it's over in Tenai.
Right.
But this is City Hall, Monday night, 6 o'clock. There is kind of a gathering of some sort, information, and then at 7, There will be, it sounds like they're answering questions from council candidates. And so it doesn't seem like it's going to be a debate necessarily. They didn't advertise it as a debate. I'm not sure it will be organized that way. You know, it could very well just be that all the candidates will be up on stage for those that decide to attend. And then all of a sudden, here's the Wednesday paper. Maybe you can look in there.
Yeah,
Dennis.
Listen here.
And then all of a sudden, people from the audience can just raise their hand and ask one candidate or another, and it might be sort of an open, free-spirited forum. So we'll have to see how that's going to go. I'm sorry I don't have full information on that. Dennis is looking through the paper. There should be something in there about that, but oh well. Always never go far from your Press and Guide or your Times Herald. And, of course, Press and Guide does have their own website, which is pressandguide.com. Okay. Other topics here from Wednesday. We did, it does mention in there the passing of John J. Hubbard, former clerk and city councilman here in Dearborn, who served Dearborn for many years. He was the son of Orville Hubbard, and his daughter, Wayne County Circuit Judge Susan Hubbard, is still serving in that capacity. So it gives a nice little background about that. It also mentions that, of course, since Nancy Hubbard has decided not to run again for Dearborn City Council in the November election, it'll be the first time in 60 years that a Hubbard has not somewhere been on the city ballot. So, now, one thing I wanted to comment on, though, and of course, we do opinions here right and left, and it's not to tell you how to think, but maybe to get you discussing these things with your friends. The city put up three more voiceover warning sirens. Okay? We have these big horns, if you will, on a lot of the telephone poles around the city. I'm looking around the Bryant Library parking lot, and I don't see any. I don't know if we get the message of an emergency out here or not, but most residential sections do have them. I thought, since they were put up back in the 80s, that every single city administration, even the police department officials, have told me that they don't work. That, first of all, the announcing part can't be heard, can't be understood. And maybe in summer it's not a bad idea, but in winter, when everybody's indoors with their windows shut, nobody can make out what the heck is being said. And even in summer, if you're under it, Dennis, why don't you help Maureen here? We're here to serve, folks. You found it? Okay, I'll do it. Thank you. Okay. So I'd have to say, I'd have to question anyway, city administration and the police, these new voiceover warning sirens, since I've been told for 20 years that the present system doesn't work, it's not just because you don't have enough of them. Maybe there's a new technology? Are they more clear in reproducing the human voice? Why add more to a system that I thought was going to be done away with completely? Because they haven't worked for 30 years. Of course, the answer is, hey, we got some free money here. Yeah, okay, maybe that's it. Okay, maybe they got some, yeah, federal money was used to install the sirens. So, hey, federal money, do it, whether it makes sense or not. It will make us look very proactive. And you know, if you stop taking federal money, maybe they won't give you any more in the future. I don't know. I'm being a little bit cynical there, but I just don't see how adding these warning sirens with voiceover capability is going to add to the terrible system we already have. But, oh, well, moving on. A special meeting is set for in October 3rd, in fact, right before the regular city council meeting, for a committee of the whole meeting at the request of City Assessor Gary Evanko. And this is what it's about. The council will hold a public hearing for 10 minutes on an industrial facilities tax exemption certificate request by Ford Motor Company. They're going to make $2.5 million in improvements at the Dearborn Truck Plant in the Rouge Complex, according to Mayor Jack O'Reilly. So, again, thank you very much, Ford Motor Company. You want to make these improvements, I assume, because you want to make more profit in the long run. But you don't want to have to pay any more taxes. And, of course, I suspect, and I'm being very cynical here, but after years of Ford Motor Company getting tax break after tax break, and other companies too, is it really worth it for the city of Dearborn to do this? I know we're always being threatened. I know at one point there was even an off-the-record threat from Ford that if you don't give us a tax break, we'll move the Ford World Headquarters. We'll just go to another state. I mean, that was about 20 years ago, but I thought, even though that was not official, but, you know, a veiled threat or something done off the record at some bar somewhere by a Ford official, there shouldn't be these kinds of tax exemptions for businesses that are making profits, okay, making a lot of profits, and Ford is doing quite well, thank you. I know Ford will say, but we're going to have more jobs in the area. Yeah, well, you'd have more jobs. And you could still afford the whole thing even if you were paying taxes. So I know you have your tax lawyers. They're the whole group of them, and they're on, you know, salary, and so they got to do something with their time to save you money. But personally, I would hope city council would stop giving these tax exemptions to these companies that are clearly making profits. You know, a lot of the companies, the small businesses I'm speaking for here in Dearborn, they'd love to have a tax break, but they don't get them, and they've been here for years.
So sometimes those tax breaks are the difference between those businesses surviving and not surviving.
Right, for the small people, yeah. So I just, that's my opinion, and you don't have to agree, and a lot of people at Ford Motor are probably dialing council people now about me, but I don't think any company should have special tax exemptions, and I think it's at the federal level. There should be a law against any cities, counties, or states giving tax exemptions. Just whatever your tax rate is, that's what they got to pay. Everybody's got to pay their fair share here. That's what I feel. Oh, well. Now, want to get this in? This is the official. No, that's the forum on school. Oh, the council race. Okay, there's two stories in the Sunday Press and Guide. Page 15A.
Isn't that weird?
And that's why I guess I was confused. They were covering both of them here. Did I get Monday right?
You got Monday right.
Yes. Okay. Did I get the time and the place right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes.
Council Chambers.
Okay. Council Chambers, and it starts about 6 o'clock, City Hall, Michigan Avenue. Okay. That's September 23rd. That is Monday. Very good. Okay. Okay. Glad we got that in place.
Well, it's nice to confirm.
Yep. Also, in the last, we only have 4 minutes, and it's back to programming from WHFR. I do want to tell our listeners that Highway 61 is going to have a delayed start today because Joanne Kostrinska has to be out of town. It's a personal thing, not a health problem on her part. But something came up in her family again, and I'm going to be there, but I have to get there first, and so probably Highway 61, the Best in Blues, won't begin until 3 o'clock today. Great programming is going to be selected by Joe back in the studio. And he's got his choice of either classical or maybe one of the great pre-recorded Broadway shows that he's done for us just for such a moment. So we'll see. I want to mention this little promo. We're having a benefit concert of three bands down, I thought it was four, at a venue near the Eastern Market tomorrow night, Trinasos. So all you young people or young at heart people, if you're down by the Eastern Market, starts about 8 o'clock, and it's only a donation of $5 at the door. There's indie rock bands or an experimental jazz band and something called Casio Pop artist. Stephanie Rearick Jr. is coming all the way, I think, from Wisconsin.
What is kind of music? Is it on a Casio keyboard?
Maybe? It's something simple and poppy sounding, you know, light. And I just read in Keyboard Magazine, which is a national publication, and she must be a keyboardist. Casio is a keyboard, right?
Sure.
That she is one of the most creative and, how do they put it, creative and energetic of the new keyboard artists and doing new music in the U.S. today. So she's coming in and giving her time just for WHFR. Her name again is Stephanie Rearick Jr., and they'll be down there. So if you're around Gratiot, near Eastern Market, Trinasos is the name of the venue. It's not a bar. It's just sort of a performance area for music. I think they have coffee and pastries.
Lara says the coffee is amazing.
Yeah.
Lara said, I'm a big coffee fan, and she thought that would draw me down there.
Yeah. Now, during the day, they do have brunch, a variety of sandwiches and things, but not tomorrow night. So if you can make it down to that benefit, that's great. I'll mention in advance for those people that love browsing through our record shows, October 26th is our sixth annual record show. It's going to be held at Henry Ford Community College. That's Saturday, October 26th, and a fun time will be had by all. Basic hours are from 10 to 5. Hope we can see you there for the sixth annual WHFR record show. Also going to be people selling a variety of equipment, some record players, too, of all
turntables,
things.
Yeah.
Turntables, yeah, including WHFR. We're going to be selling some of our own items and some of our own used CDs at that point, too. So, okay, about a minute to go. Thank you, Dennis. Thank you, Susan McGraw. Thank you to all of the folks here at the Dearborn Farmers and Artists Market. Maureen McElrath has already left, right? Or she got her stuff in the car anyway. Yep. So some of the vendors will be here until 3 o'clock. We have to get back to the station, so we're going to say bye-bye now. So say bye-bye, Dennis.
Bye-bye, Dennis.
There you go. That's the old joke. This is WHFR Dearborn. Back to the studio, and I'll be talking to you in about an hour, I guess.
All your help, Joe.
Thanks, Joe. Bye-bye.
I'm in love with you for the rest of my whole life through. To come my way, can't you see I'm under? Your spell, by the look in my eyes, can't you tell now, don't you?